The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning, everyone. And is that loud enough? Yes? So, good morning. And those of you online who are also attending, good morning to you or good day. And I'll start with an announcement. So we have, over time, changed some of the COVID protocol from the when we first opened up, and feel like we're ready to do another small change, big change, and that is the Sunday morning here has been by registration, supposed to sign up ahead of time in order to keep the numbers within about 50 or so. And it seems like things have changed enough that it seems time not to do that register sign up anymore, and not to limit the numbers. So starting in April, that's the way it works. And I don't know if any of you have already signed up for next week, but there's no longer a need. And for the time being, we'll keep the room set up the way it is with the chairs and stuff, because it does kind of create a little bit of social distancing. And we'll maybe put out more chairs in the outer hall. You can get a pretty good view in from the other side. And some people used to, before the pandemic, some people preferred to sit out there. They thought the sound was better out there. And then at some point we'll rearrange the room the way it used to be pre-pandemic, which puts the chairs closer together. So that's a change. And then we're still requiring the N95 masks. And I can very much appreciate that some of you feel maybe that's not needed anymore and feel maybe even a little annoyed that we should still be old-fashioned this way. But I think it's still very helpful. And for the most part, the discomfort that comes with wearing them, it makes for great practice. And we have a practice that's supposed to help us with this kind of discomfort, to find our comfort with this discomfort. So you know, if we were some other kind of place, maybe, you know, if we were a bowling club, maybe there's no practice then to maybe that kind of practice. But we have one, so hopefully we can just fold it in and work with it for a while longer. And then at some point, probably the masks will become optional, but when that is, it's not so clear. We're just feeling our way step by step as we go along here. And I think the need for a level of inner safety, inner comfort around not being afraid about COVID or something or less, is actually quite important for people who are meditating, because as we get quieter and quieter, stiller and stiller, if it does happen, we're in some ways more tender, more sensitive, more impacted by very subtle things. And so the level of safety around this COVID thing can have an effect on people's meditation, I think. So, yesterday I was doing my taxes. And that seemed to go fine, more or less, until I tried to submit them electronically. And then it became Kafkaesque. And it was like, you got to be kidding me. Really? But that's not just doesn't work. One of the things was I had to submit the first four letters of my wife's last name. But she only has three letters in her last name. So a lot of people do. So I couldn't figure out how to get around that. And then it's later they wouldn't the IRS wouldn't accept her personal information. So you have to contact Social Security office to get it sorted out. But they're closed. So. Anyway, so that was frustrating, Kafkaesque, and I was more humbled by my level of frustration than, you know, anything has done for a long time. So that's a long way of saying that. So I hadn't given any thought to what to talk about today. So I woke up this morning, a teeny bit of a hangover from that experience. And I thought, well, what am I going to talk about? And so sometimes, well, I'm going to do my early morning meditation, and sometimes something comes up in that. So I was doing my, minding my own business, doing my morning meditation. At some point, it occurred to me, well, I'll talk about what I've been thinking about the most in the Dharma lately. I'm kind of interested in it, and that seemed obvious. Okay, back to my meditation. And then floated up this thought later on. Well, I need to have an example illustration to talk about this Dharma thing. Back into my meditation. And then at the end of it, the pops floated up, this meditation will be the example. So that's what we're doing today. So the example in meditation was that I sat down to meditate. And my mind was still, I think, a little bit in the leftover frustration level with having done the taxes. It was kind of racing or kind of spinning and more than usual. And it felt a little bit like if my mind was a car, I would still be in second gear, but driving at the speed for the fourth gear. And, you know, it's kind of like racing and, you know, really high whining, kind of like something's racing here. You know, like, oh, wow. And, like, you know, this is not me. There's something has taken over here. There's a compulsive or drivenness in my thinking. And then, you know, I thought maybe it's a little bit like being in a terrible storm with strong wind and kind of hunkering down, making your way through it, you know, like just making yourself small or something. Because by the end of the meditation, the storm had cleared, and it wasn't that I got into fourth gear, I think I got into neutral, even better. And there was this wonderful feeling of being released from this drivenness, the compulsivity of these thoughts that went on. But that took, you know, the duration of the meditation. And part of that journey was going through at the beginning and saying, wow, 45 years of meditation, and this is what it comes to? And I thought, yeah, okay, well, I have to accept this. I have to let go of this. This is a bit humbling or a little bit, you know, so that's okay. Maybe it's good to be humbled or good to kind of let go and accept this is how it is. And so, okay, so the freedom was found in just accepting this is how it is. As my mind is out of control, it's spinning, it's going fast. And okay, well, that's the deal. So there was a certain kind of freedom, but it wasn't like celebratory freedom. But, you know, okay, this is the way it is. So then as I meditated, I could feel slowly my body was tense, and then begin the tension kind of settled. After the tension, my body started settling, I could feel my mind beginning to settle. Just by doing the meditation, just showing up and being present. I didn't feel like I could address the compulsivity, the drivenness directly. It just felt like that was just getting mired in the mud, mired in, you know, just adding fuel to the second gear. So I just kind of like get out of the way, let myself be humbled or simple or just kind of. And then after, you know, the end of the meditation, things had settled enough that there was a sense of relief, release. And now the feeling was one of kind of delight. Like, ah, this is nice. Something has let go. And then I got to a point where tax thoughts, that if they arose, I could just let go of them. I could release them. And now the releasing of them, the letting go of them, just felt like a pleasure, like a delight, like a wonder, what a wonderful thing to be able to do this and come back to this kind of much more simple, relaxed, easeful way of being. So that's the example for what I'll talk about. And so in the Buddhist vocabulary, the ancient Indian vocabulary, the language the Buddha taught, there's a whole family of words related to liberation. And the different words have different nuances of associations with them. And some of them have directly to do with the word liberation in English, or liberation, freedom, emancipation, these kinds of, kind of release, kind of positive words we would have in English. But some of the words, are often translated into English in words which, for some English speakers, are not celebratory words like freedom or something. They're actually maybe a little bit off-putting. So some words, for example, is sometimes translated into English as giving up. Now, the tone of the voice maybe has a lot to do with how that's taken, giving up. You know, oh no, we have to give up again. And it's a kind of a surrender, a kind of hopelessness. Okay, this is it. The word relinquishment is used for one of this family of words. So I looked up the synonyms for relinquishment in the thesaurus. They're not good news. most of them were not good news. You wouldn't be happy with if we use these words. So one of them is abdicate. So maybe the association with the relinquishment is not automatically, you know, so great. And then there's the word letting go. Maybe the tone of voice also has something to do with it. Letting go for some people is not a good idea, not welcome news. You have to let go of that. In fact, sometimes people will tell you, just let go. And like you, it's kind of infuriating. You know, what are you telling me, you know? As if it's easy to let go, or... And then people tell you to let go of things you shouldn't let go of. Let go of everything. Let go of your house, your possessions, let go of, you know. Just let go of doing your taxes. So letting go sometimes doesn't have positive connotations. But it turns out that in English, some of these words that are kind of not necessarily good news anymore for us, if you do the archaeological digging in the word, the etymology of the word is actually quite wonderful. It seems like the word giving up originally meant offer up to the altar. So that's kind of a sacred act. Someone tells you got to sacrifice that. But the word sacrifice originally meant to make, in Latin, to make sacred. Well, that's a beautiful thing. So, you know, back there in the background of the word, there's something quite lovely. And apparently the word surrender also. Surrender doesn't seem like a good idea. But apparently it meant kind of a superior, super kind of rendering, a giving. Again, this giving. So all these words, there's a kind of... have a positive connotations originally. Turns out in Pali, in the Buddhist language, the same thing occurs. But not so much in the etymology of the word, but in the meaning of the word. That some of this family of words having to do with liberation means both something like letting go and generosity. Letting go and giving. And depending on the context of what's being taught, and sometimes it's translated as relinquishment or letting go and giving up. But sometimes it's actually translated as giving. And then when it's translated as giving, it's directly connected to feeling delight. Just feeling the delight of giving. Feeling the delight of letting go, feeling the delight of giving, feeling the delight of relinquishment. So in Pali, those words are kind of all the same. There's a word chaga, which means both generosity and letting go. There's the patinisaga, which means relinquishment and giving. There's vusoga, which means both relinquishment and giving. So when you hear these words, you know, have this double meaning, then translating as letting go or relinquishment doesn't capture some of the richness or the association to it. So I've tried, you know, well, let's use giving as part of it. So maybe giving up. but and then I thought, well, how about giving away? But doesn't quite, maybe. So then I thought, well, just forget about the up and the away, or let's just call it giving. And I like that, but then you don't get a sense of what it means for the giver, that it's a beautiful feeling of release that goes on. To give with release, to give where giving is free, a kind of a freedom, to give where giving is a kind of a, you know, just feels like fresh air. It feels like the, you know, the over-revved car is back in neutral and resting, or the feel like the storm is over and it's gotten to be calm and peaceful. So what is it, this release that we can have, this giving that feels wonderful, celebratory? And this is a clear association that the Buddha has with the deepest forms of letting go, of liberation that we can have. It's clearly a release. It's clearly something disappears, is given up, is let go of. But it's not a diminishment, but rather in kind of it feels great. In fact, the Buddha said something like, if relinquishing something, and the word he uses here can mean both giving and letting go, if relinquishing something brought about unwholesome states of mind, I would not teach you to do so. But if relinquishing something, letting go of something, giving up something, giving away something, results in wholesome states of mind for you, then I recommend you do it. So this is not a blanket teaching, just let go, let go, let go, no matter what. It's letting go in a way that leads to positive states of mind. And so to be able to discern that's part of the criteria for knowing when to let go. Oh, I'm actually better by not holding on to this. There's something gets freed, something good happens. And then when the Buddha describes the things we actually, what he recommends we relinquish, we let go of, and then sometimes he actually uses words that there's no redeeming the words. I'm trying to redeem some of these words, right? There's a family of words. So freedom, you don't have to redeem. Liberation, that's good, right? But relinquishment, giving up, that's you have to redeem a little bit here. That's what I'm trying to do. But there's some words he uses which have no redeeming. He uses like words like abandon. So, uh-oh. But what do we abandon? What do we relinquish? And all my wealth, you know, my friends, my possessions, my sexuality, right? All these party pooping things. And I'm not going to say you're not supposed to do that, but here's a list. So this, you can leave now before you hear it. Uh-oh, here he comes. Lust, hatred, delusion, anger, hostility, denigration, insolence, envy, miserlessness, deceitfulness, craftiness, obstinacy, vehemence, conceit, arrogance, intoxication, heedlessness. It's a great list. So what do these have in common, all these words? They all have to do with inner states in our mind, in our hearts. They're nothing to do with things of the world and what's out there. these are things to to be let go of. But to let go of them, to relinquish, to give to something. But how do we do that? That's actually the full context of this quote. How do we accomplish this? What help? What states of mind can be cultivated to make this possible? And the Buddha says, you want to cultivate a deep capacity for tranquility, serenity, and insight. What the practice we do here. To really see clearly. So that when you let go, you see, you understand really deeply what you're letting go of and why. Without seeing clearly, letting go is not wise. We want to let go in wise ways, so that with that wisdom, that we can, it's easier to let go. We know why we're letting go, and so we're not letting go of the wrong things. And so we can better appreciate the benefits that come from letting go. We learn how to let go, how to relinquish, how to give it all away or to be generous. It's an act of generosity, the movement of freedom. So when I was sitting in my meditation this morning, you know, kind of putting up with my state of mind, grumpy state of mind, spinning mind. Mostly what I had to do was kind of like, okay, well, I guess I can be humbled sometimes. Okay, I have to accept this too. I'll let go of, you know, I probably have to let go of some kind of conceit of I'm a great meditator today. And so that wasn't inspiring. But, you know, it was needed maybe. Just, okay, I'll just have to practice with this. And then by the end, it was an act of generosity. Oh, there's those thoughts again. But now I had enough serenity, enough insight. Just, okay, I'll release those. And I could feel the goodness of it. I could feel how it felt good to do it. And it kind of felt like a generous thing to do, because the alternative was not generous. The alternative was not good for me. To go back into those thoughts, I could feel I had the choice, easy choice. It was like you take your hand off the hot stove, kind of. And so I could appreciate it. I could value it. And so part of the wisdom of letting go is learning to recognize the goodness of doing so, to recognize how we're better because of it, what gets released, the space that's created, the room it gives for beneficial states to bubble up and to flow, and the delight, the joy. So there's a family of words connected to freedom in Buddhism, the goal of Buddhism, liberation. Some of them more literally means liberation. Some of them have this dual meaning of giving and giving up, relinquishing and giving something away. And where does it go? If you're grumpy, give it away. But don't give it to anyone. Give it to space. Give it to the ocean. Give it to the sky. It knows what to do with it. And many years ago, I discovered that at the end of meditation, the end of retreat, whatever calm I had would usually go away after some time. And I used to be a little bit grumpy then. And what I learned was, if it's going to go away anyway, why don't I set the intention to give it away? I'll just give it to the world. And just that shift made me feel so much better. Rather than holding on to it or feeling disappointed that my good state was leaving, I said, great, another thing to let go of, another thing to be generous to. So if you permit me, allow me, there is a kind of children's song, I think. I think it's children's song. Maybe it's an adult song. Maybe it should be an adult song. That goes something like, love is something if you give it away, you only end up with more. In Buddhism, they say the same thing for merit. That if you give away all the merit from the good things you've done, that's really meritorious. You get more merit. And what is merit? Merit is all the good feelings, all the happiness that comes from the good things you do. So do good things, feel the happiness, and give away that happiness. Share it with others. Don't hold on to it for yourself. And you'll end up more, with more. So the intimate connection in Buddhism between letting go and generosity and giving, freedom and generosity. The intimate connection in Buddhism in the other way too, between giving and generosity and freedom. Where do we start? Do we start with freedom and get generosity? Or do we start with generosity and then, lo and behold, we get freedom? So I just left you with a big problem. And to figure that one out. Aren't you lucky? That's your problem? Just start anywhere. Makes sense. Either one. It's a great thing. It's a celebratory, a wonderful thing that in these two languages, maybe many other languages, that there's such a recognized, such a close connection between letting go and generosity. May you come to appreciate that and value it and find a way. So thank you. So we have a little bit of time. We can do a few questions or comments in here. Testimonials about letting go and generosity. And then and maybe in about 10 minutes or so, those of you who want to stay, we can go out to the parking lot and take some folding chairs and sit out there in a circle. And if you'd like, we can take off the mask there and all of us and just have a continue the discussion there. But for now, any comments or question in here that someone...
Okay, like this. My question is, when you realize that there's a state to let go of, how do you make the choice between trying to relax and do nothing to allow it to pass, or to try to engage loving kindness with yourself?
So there's so many strategies to learn what's needed at any given time, and some of it just comes from practice. You just try different things. So you know now, apparently you know two things now, you know, letting go and loving kindness, right? What good fortune that you have these two tools. And so now you got to practice with them until you get the street smarts. You understand how it works and when one works, when one doesn't work, when one feels like the best thing for you. And then you learn also through trial and error. You know, well, I'm not sure, but right now I feel more attracted to loving kindness. And you do it, and after a while you say, no, actually, that doesn't work. That's not really working today. So I think that's the best way, rather than give you some formula. Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you.
I understand the topic of today is letting go, but my question is, why acquire?
Why what?
Why acquire?
To begin with?
To begin with, yeah. You know, there's this saying that like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So why be agitated about doing taxes? Why don't just laugh at IRS who has all these problems? And it's their problem, not yours, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why do you get agitated?
Now you're asking such profound questions I cannot answer.
But, you know, you said after 45 years, this is what it amounts for. So for you, it's easy to say that, right? Like you have such a confidence in your practice. But for us, we're looking up to you as a teacher. Oh, and we don't have 45 years, right? So what do we do?
I hope I didn't.
How do we get the confidence in our practice?
I hope I didn't discourage you today.
That's fine. It is a little discouraging. To be completely honest, it is discouraging.
I think that 45 years ago, what I didn't have was any ability to get some perspective on my grumpiness in the race, in the racing mind. I would have been sucked into it and caught in it, and I was not today. It's like, oh, look at that. That's interesting. So there was some freedom there.
As always, there's two sides, right? So one side, I am a little discouraged. On the other side, I'm very inspired by your ability to talk openly about this topic and, you know, being relatable to us. And it makes me more willing to listen, actually, to you, because it seemed like you're willing to be honest, very honest.
Great, great. Oh, so in this regard, I think I might have said this last Sunday or somewhere. I don't know. I teach so much, so who knows where I said it. I think in this practice we do, we're all of us all the time beginners. But what happens when you've practiced for 45 years, you're just an experienced beginner, which makes it easier, makes it a lot easier, but you're still just a beginner. So don't get too, don't expect too much.
Hi, Gil. I really liked an analogy used today that I hadn't heard before about letting go, which was to take your hand off the hot stove. Whenever someone says relax to me, I tense up. And whenever someone says I love it when they proceed with the word just let go, I cling. So at least I've arrived at that awareness.
Hold on.
There's the aspiration, right? And so I thought of removing the hand off the stove, and then I thought, take my hand out of the fire. When I think about the thing that will grab me is a feeling that somebody has really wronged me or dissed me or something in a way that will have consequences. Not just, gee, I didn't like that. That's a feeling. I can get that. But, oh, shit, 12 other people who I cared about heard that and were influenced. That's a problem. And so I'm going to work with this idea of taking my hand out of the fire. But whenever I want to give up something, I need something to go to. If I'm going to give up sugar, I need to go to vegetables or something. I need to have a goal. I need to not give up as much as I get something different. Can you give me any guidance around that process? What can I substitute?
Okay, it's wonderful things you said. So first I want to say that one of the functions of developing mindfulness is to develop a heightened sensitivity to recognize the hot stove or the fire. And so then if it's really a hot stove, you don't need anything better to go to. It's just you want to get out of it because it's so obvious, so instinctual. And so as we get more sensitive, we feel the suffering. In fact, some of you have heard me say that I recommend that we should learn how to suffer better in this practice. And that's also discouraging. But suffering better means you don't go out and make better suffering. It means that you feel your suffering more acutely so that you can learn the lessons of it, so that you can... the instinct not to be there, to pull back or to step away, can operate. So sometimes that's the only thing that helps. And sometimes some of the deepest attachments, at some point in this practice, it just like you reach rock bottom, and you have to give up. Sometimes giving up is what's called for, surrender. Okay, I surrender. Sometimes there's no other way because you've tried every option, other option. None of it works. And in my first retreats that I sat, I was miserable until I finally gave up because, not because I knew it was wise, I just nothing else. I didn't know what to do anymore. It was hopeless. So, and then the retreat started. I had to let go so deeply. and give up all hope, kind of, and then something was able to happen. So that happens sometimes. But your question, sometimes you need a reward, you need something positive. I think that's really wise also. And this is where I think much of the Western Buddhist teaching that I grew up with when I was, you know, just 40 years ago and so, was so much on letting go and letting go and letting go. And there was even an emphasis, a clear emphasis, not to emphasize the good mental states that can come with practice, because you have to let go of that too. You have to let go of that too and not have a goal. But if you read the teachings of the Buddha, there's a lot of carrots in there. There's a lot of emphasis on cultivating and developing beautiful states of mind. And developed them to the point of abundance. We let go of things that harm us, but things that benefit us, we let them grow and develop in abundance. So what are those things? Joy, peace, happiness, equanimity is one of them, generosity, wisdom, equanimity, compassion and loving kindness and anukampa, care and ethical integrity. These are all beautiful states that exist in us. So as we practice and clear kind of the debris from our mind, we start seeing and feeling and getting a visceral kind of embodied experience of what these states are like. So then we say, oh, when I let go, I can return to those. And a turning point for me in my practice was to start feeling feelings of peace and love was one of them, that it just felt like that was almost like the natural state. And so the commitment in practice, the kind of the vow that I made in practice, was to orient my life to stay true to those, because that was more who I was than the opposite. But that was because I had learned to recognize it. And it wasn't always readily accessible, those states, but I knew that that's what the practice was helping me do. So sometimes you don't get the rewards right away. Sometimes you have to wait a while for them. So does this address your question well enough?
Yeah, it really did. You triggered a memory for me. My life coach is always saying that in these difficult moments, there is gift and opportunity. And I always groan at him. But I think now I get what you said and I get what he said. So that's what I will look for, is the gift and opportunity for all of these more beneficial states.
Yeah. And so in one of the, you know, great gifts of this mindfulness practice is when we see that just to be mindful in a situation, that is its own reward. Wow. You know, I mean, wow. You step back, you step away, you open up, and you're really here. And yes, you're grumpy. Yes, you're whatever. But wow, this is like the clouds just parted. So, thank you all very much. And so we have about 5 minutes before the formal ending. So what I'd like to ask of you, because I feel like community is such a hugely important part of what's happening in this post-pandemic world, if you'd be willing to just turn to someone next to you here and welcome them here. Even if this is your first time here, you can welcome them and say your name or something and talk a little bit if you want. And then in about 5 minutes, I'll go out and we can meet in the parking lot.